point in the story of Yisrael, it would seem on the surface to be a minor point. Very interesting in this 30 Chumash, as I said, the way the Chumash describes things is very unusual. There's no other book like it. And the same, as we've seen, that what it chooses to recount and what it chooses to ignore, and the way it tells the story, and suddenly it leaves you up in the middle of the story, and goes on to a different point. I mean, it doesn't read like a history book, and it doesn't read like a novel. Now, in the story of Yisro, basically it's telling us about a reunion between Yisro and Moshe. Obviously they had a close relationship, which went back to the time when Moshe had intervened to save the daughters of Yisro from being oppressed, so to speak, by the shepherds. And he had driven off the shepherds, and then he had voided the sheep and so forth, and the story. And Yisro was a unique individual, according to Chazal. He was Kohen Midyan. He was an individual who taught the ideas of God. Although, doesn't mean to say that he had the exact same philosophy of Moshe Rabbeinu or whatever, but he formed a relationship with Moshe Rabbeinu because he was interested in this government. So, then, before Moshe goes back to Mitzrayim, after God commands him to do so he takes leave of Yisro. That's how he records that, he took leave of Yisro. He doesn't really tell him why he's going back to Mitzrayim. He just says, let me go back and see my brothers, if they're still alive. That's that concern. This is very, very cryptic. He doesn't go into this concern. Okay. But Yisro gives him his blessing, and he returns back to Mitzrayim. Now, afterwards, in Yisro, Parshas Yisro, it picks up the story of Yisro again. Now, the Torah devotes an entire parsha to the story of Yisro. So, take a look at Perek Yitzchak, the very beginning of the Sedra, and it tells you that Yisro heard everything that God had done for Moshe and Israel, and his nation Israel, and that he took the B'nai Yisrael out of Egypt. Then, let's take a look at the next puzzle. This is really, again, where the Torah is very sparse on details, it seems to be a trivial thing to record. And Yisro took Tzipora, the wife of Moshe, after he had sent her away, and her two sons. The name of one was Gershom, for he said, "I was a stranger in a foreign land." And the name of the other one was Eliezer, because the God of my father helped me, sustained me, and saved me from the sword of Pharaoh. These psukim are interesting because it seems to me it's repetitious. We've already learned the names. The Torah is repeating itself over here, the thing. There are a number of questions. The Torah has already told us about the name of Gershom, that he had named him Gershom, and the reason. But it had not mentioned Eliezer. So that could be explained. So now it's introducing us to Eliezer. And telling us the name and the reasons of the name, so then it repeats the fact of Gershom. Alright, you could say that that's the reason for the repetition. But there are questions that can be asked over here. As Max says, the name of Eliezer is testimony to the miracle. So that Moshe should remember the miracle that God had saved him from the sword of Paro. Yet if you read the story, you don't need anything at all that Moshe had ever been subjected to the sword of Pharaoh. So that's a question right there. This is a lag of Urcha. Because there are medrashim to the effect that Moshe, which by the way, goes contrary. There are medrashim that would seem to go contrary to the flow of the story. It would seem that when Moshe had his confrontation with Dathan and Aviram, two Jews on the second occasion we went out, and it turned out that they knew, and they accused him, "Are you going to kill us just like you killed the Mitzri?" And Moshe said, "Achein no da hadava," but he realized that the matter was known, so then he escaped. the Torah does not record that he got into trouble. He just escaped. If you take a look at the description, go back to Shmos Beis. This is Pasuk Tetzvah. And Pasuk Yadalad is Moshe's confrontation with, Moshe's confrontation with Dathan and Aviram, where they turn on him and they accuse him. they don't accuse him, they state as a fact, are you going to kill us? Do you intend to kill us as you killed the Egyptians? So you know Moshe Vayomar, and Moshe was greatly frightened and said, Achein, no, the Hadava. Which means, alright, so there's implications here, a deep implication. But Achein, no, the Hadava, claim shot is, of course, that he's in trouble. Now it is known that he slew the Egyptian. And just as Moshe feared, take a look at the next pasuk. Vayishma Paro Hadavar Zeh. And Paro heard about it. Of course, you have to ask, how did Paro hear about it? He told Paro. Take a look at Rashi. Vayishma Paro Hain Helshinu Alam. They were Malshin. Malshin Paro. You have to say that. Because who told Paro? It turns out at this point in time, as far as we know, we don't know how many people knew. We don't know who knew, we don't know who didn't know. But clearly, Rabbi Chait made the observation. How did Dathan and Aviram find out? Because Moshe had checked. Moshe, it says that he looked all around when he killed the Egyptian. Before he did so, he made sure to see that there was nobody there. So this should strike us as very, very strange. How could these people be accusing Moshe? Moshe looked around, there was nobody there. The facts are, he went out one day, and there was an Egyptian beating up on a Jew. Okay, so Moshe intervened, but it says, Ba'ifim Tov Bechov, Ayaki Hanish. He looked all around, he saw that there was no one else. It was an isolated situation. So therefore we say, as far as Moshe was concerned, to kill the Egyptians. They went in and killed the Egyptians. I would assume, take the story literally, I would assume that there was anybody watching or wasn't there? That's the question.
Well, as long as
he didn't see anyone. Because in the very next pasuk, it turns out that there were people that knew about it. Now the next day goes out and he finds two other people. Now the two other people he found the next day were not the same. In other words, one of these people was not the individual who he had saved. It's not, doesn't seem to be the case. It is hard to imagine that it would be the individual who Moshe had saved from the Egyptian. That would be very, very difficult, and I think the Pasuk would point that out. Because that would be, you would assume that anyone whose life was saved would not only he wouldn't want to turn on Moshe, I'll tell you for another reason. Because it would be in his own best interest to keep the entire matter a secret, would it not?
Yes.
Because it looked like if you were the one who Moshe had saved, so it's in your interest too, because if the matter is discovered, they will also want to find out what was going on, so you're going to be under investigation. That means you're involved. You're an accomplice. Why didn't you? I mean, clearly you don't want to get involved in that, obviously. Okay. That's clear. The individual who Moshe saved, let's assume some gratitude. But you don't assume gratitude. Purely on the basis of self-interest, right? He wants the matter to be discovered. Undiscovered. He doesn't want the matter to be discovered. He's going to get into trouble that he has self-interest in the matter. Because even, first of all, they may say that he was involved in the killing. But the two of them ganged up. But beyond that, if the story is investigated, you were involved in the case. You were involved in the case. You were being disciplined. No one is going to take up your position that it was a matter of self-defense here. You were being disciplined. Moshe came along. You should have stopped Moshe. Or whatever the case is, you're going to suffer for this. So clearly, the individual who Moshe saved has absolutely no interest in having this discovered, pretty much like Moshe. That's why Moshe, apparently Moshe was not concerned about him telling the Egyptians. He wouldn't do so. Otherwise, you have to ask yourself, so why wasn't Moshe concerned that this Jew who he had saved would tell? It's obvious that he wants to keep it a secret. The problem on our hands, because Moshe Rabbeinu acted with great intelligence in everything that he did. So before he would kill the Egyptian, right, if there was somebody, had there been other people around, he would not have done this, obviously. That's why it says he looked around.
How do we know he wouldn't have?
Because it says, by virtue of the fact that it says, Vayar Kienish, and he saw that there was no person, and then he did it, the implication is that had there been a person, he wouldn't have done it. Because if it was irrelevant, the pasuk wouldn't tell you. That's how you have to learn the pasuk. All right, so Lenin is raising the question. I don't think you could ask that. For the time being, let's put aside the question. It's clear from the way that the Torah describes the situation that, and this you know makes sense to us, that Vayar Kienish, he saw there was no person, Vayar Kienish, so that's cause and effect. If there was no relationship between the two, the Torah wouldn't record it. In fact, then the Torah would show, then the Torah would have just said he went ahead and killed them, right? And you'd ask, what about the people? Then you'd have a right to make the deduction that Moshe Rabbeinu really didn't care because he wanted to save the Jewish life. I mean, he's even there. It's an interesting point that even though Moshe wanted to save a life, he was not prepared to do so at the risk of his own life. I mean, that's going too far. He might have risked his own life, but he was acting sensibly. He was not, apparently, he would not do this. He would not do this if it was clear that he was going to get caught. That's what said that, I believe, what you can deduce. Otherwise, what's the point of looking around? The original statement I made is too harsh. Of course Moshe Rabbeinu would risk his life to save the Jew. That's a different issue. You see? But here we're saying something else. If there were other Egyptians around, it's not just the risk, they'll shoot you, they'll kill you on the spot, or whatever. So apparently Moshe Rabbeinu didn't want to be killed.
Did
he kill the Mel raised the question, did he have to kill the Egyptians? Could he have not saved them in a different way? Why was it necessary to kill the Egyptians? The most logical explanation seems to me is that, I mean, these are two possibilities. either from a physical standpoint, there was no way that he could stop him. Now, what's he supposed to do? Reason with him, he couldn't do. Apparently, Moshe, you have to understand that, that he could not have convinced him with arguments to cease. So then, what's your choice if you're going to wound him? I mean, let's assume he would beat him up and save the Jew. So that's, you can't do that. Let's assume that Moshe was strong enough. It would seem that Moshe was a man of great strength because Vayach is a mitzvah. Now, this mystery was a taskmaster. I mean, he was someone that was obviously capable of fighting. He was an officer. There's a certain sense that the Torah is conveying to you, because it tells you that Moshe went out to see, right? To see what the reason why he went out was Vayete Alecha Vayar B'Sivloso. He saw them in their labors, Vayar Ish Mitzri Make Ish Ivri Me'echav. So that's the context. The context is that they were in the midst of their labors, and in the labors they had these slaves. And they had the slave drivers, the taskmaster. So this clearly was a taskmaster. It was an officer. Ish Mitzri, no geis hoya. Mamuna al shotrei Yisrael. Hoya ma'amidam mikros ha-gever v'malachtam. Rashi is saying that this was not just an ordinary, not only was he an Egyptian officer, but he was a no geis who was in charge of all of the, well, they had a system where they had the Jewish officers as well. I mean, the Jewish, yeah. Which is, you know, throughout history, that's always the case. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then in the context, you can't refer to as the kafas. However, Rashi points out later on that these were tzaddikim, that they bore the brunt, that they defended the Jews when the order came out that they would have to gather their own straw, and they didn't beat the Jews up to get more. So they were tzaddikim, and they were punished. So I'm not passing judgment, but the point is that they were organized. They had the Jewish officers who were in charge of their fellow Jews, but then you had an Egyptian who was the commander over them, so he was a no-gate. That means that he was an officer of power, with power, a police officer, whatever you want to call it. Boy, it makes sense. It makes sense because Moshe's concern was not so much for a private incident, he was concerned with the situation of the enslavement. What the pasuk is introducing us to. Let's put it this way. Moshe wasn't going around Egypt. There must have been other incidents. Aside, what? Yeah, it wasn't just a question of a Jew and a guardian, because it could be many things. That's a separate type of a thing. Moshe was concerned with the injustice that was going on, and that was the enslavement. Okay. course you have to ask yourself a question. Now the next Rashi is interesting. That's where it says that there was a reason for this. The next Rashi, Market Ish Ivri, Malkehu, he was giving him lashes. He was whipping him. Rodeu, excessive punishment. Clearly, he had a purpose. He was destroying him, so to speak. Bala shall Shlomis Bas Divri Hoya. This individual was the husband of Shlomis Bas Divri. But no son ain't of Ba. And this Egyptian had taken a liking to her. He was attracted to the wife of this Jew. Balailahan Mido, and at night he aroused him, he woke him up, the husband, Votio Mibeso, and took him out of his house. Some type of work detail, I imagine. Ruchas of Anichmas Labayas. And he returned to his house of Walushta. And, took his wife. Kispura Shehubaila. She thought it was her husband. Okay, so there was Rashi's defending her. But this Egyptian used his, ingenuity, I suppose, in order to have. To seduce the wife and his position. So he got rid of the husband, he returned, and pretended that he was the husband. Okay. V'chazar ha'ish l'beisa. Then the man came back to his house. Now, v'hirgish b'dava. Apparently the Egyptian at first was attempting to do so without having the need to deal with the husband. That would seem to be the case. He wanted to employ. He wasn't a stupid individual. He was an animal, but he wasn't a stupid one. He was attempting to use subterfuge to rape the wife of this Jew without having to deal with any type of a confrontation. But the husband came back to Hirgish to go and sensed something about him. Ukishera also mitzri. Because the husband apparently didn't understand why he'd come in the middle of the night. I mean, I guess this was bothering him. On some pretext got him out of the house, then he came back and sensed the situation, what had occurred. He figured it out. But having figured it out, he apparently, I guess he was in a dilemma what to do. And the mystery saw that he had. Apparently he was allowed. I mean, I guess in pure survival, the best thing. I don't know what we don't know the fact, particularly what he could have done to protest. We don't know what the rules were in that situation. Apparently, there was no court of authority he might have gone to complain. Apparently. So if that's the case, I guess the smartest thing would have been to act as though he didn't. Nothing had happened, but that's a very difficult thing to do, obviously. So, I mean, no one's criticizing him, but the Mitzri then realized that he had sent it. Hoya Makehu Verojo Kaleo. So therefore, he increased the pain, so to speak. He was beating him up all day long. Now, it doesn't say that he was killing him. Interesting. Why didn't he just kill him? There's a lot of things that require explanation. What's going on over here? What is it that caused Moshe Rabbeinu to swing into action? Of course, it's also interesting as to where Rashi gets this from. How does Rashi know about this? Now, that's why I'm disagreeing with Max that it wasn't entirely a private. It did have a private element to it. I agree with you on that, but it wasn't a purely separate issue that a Jew had gotten into some type of a private dispute with an Egyptian. That's not what Moshe was involved in. What he would have done in such a case, we don't know, but this is clearly related to the entire enslavement, the Siblosa. See, it had to do with the enslavement, with the oppression. Now, what really is interesting is that where do we get all this from? Where did they get this information from? Have a yid base, a yifen kavachal, ro'a ma'asalo babayis. He saw what he had done to him in the house, u'ma'asalo basadah, and what he did to him in the field. Okay, that's the medrash. U'lafib shuto kamashmal. Of course, you can't take a pasuk out of its context. The plain meaning is that he looked around. But the medrash is indicating that he did look into it a little more deeply, that it wasn't just an instantaneous reaction. Yar Kienish also indicates that it wasn't just an instantaneous reaction, that it was a nevuah, like he looked into the future to see. Moshe is suggesting that Moshe Rabbeinu was aware of the situation all along, so this was something special. I would say like this, that certainly before this time Moshe was aware of what was going on. But you have to understand, he was raised in the house of Paro. So when you're young, you take, you know, like the system. You don't criticize the system. You know, you're raised in a society, right? When you're young, when you're a teenager, you more or less assume whatever, even a situation. And I'm not taking a stand. And I'm just giving an example. Like you're raised as a, you know, high school, elementary, high school, let's say during Vietnam. I'm not saying whether that was moral or immoral. I'm not getting into that. I'm just, let's assume for argument's sake that it turns out that it's immoral. Okay? But then you go off to college and you start to think through issues and you study the matter more carefully and you become more objective and you come to the conclusion that this is immoral. So then you'll say, but you knew about this all the way back when you were a kid, this and that. Yeah, but then you weren't looking at it critically for many reasons. You know, you just, it's natural as a, when you're young, you tend to believe. You have confidence in the authorities. And then, you know, they give a certain line, patriotism, so on and so forth, and you say, you know, as a kid, you believe that everybody's telling you the truth. That happens, you know, that's a reality. And it takes a whole lifetime to get over that idea. You have a certain natural trust in authorities, that they're always telling you the truth. But as you begin to get older and you study, you realize that there's a lot of untruths going on, and eventually you may come to the conclusion that it's quite possible that the whole thing over here is false. So I would say that the prophet is saying that Moshe Rabbeinu reached a point in his life when he was really involved in the study of justice, issues of justice, right and wrong, and there came a point when he decided to investigate it. But that's not so simple. That's very difficult. To be raised in this household, of which you know, you're in the house of the king, and in a position of power, and to challenge is one of the fundamental principles of that society. That takes an individual of unique ability. But Moshe Rabbeinu was prepared to investigate the whole thing. He had reached a point where he did not just accept the system, because it's the system. That in order to do so, he had to be involved in studying something beyond the system. Only a person who's involved in the abstract, the pursuit of abstract ideas, is able to free himself. Because he is not interested in what this society is doing, what that society is doing, what this one's doing, successful, he doesn't care. He's involved in the world of abstract ideas. And then he's going to measure everything in accordance with the ideas, no matter how close it is to himself. So then, he went out to study this phenomenon. But before that time, he really couldn't study this phenomenon. What's he going to study with? You can't ask the question of what Moshe knew what was going on, knew the policy, so he decided either it's just or unjust. It's never that simple. I have no problem with that. In fact, I think you see an important lesson is that you go out and you look for yourself. Go out and look for yourself. Because he was kind of insulated. He must have been insulated from the Jewish community. He has to have been insulated from the Jewish community because he doesn't have your turn on him like we do. You're not one of us. That was their justification. Even though he's Jewish, he's not one of us. So, there's nothing wrong with that. In fact, it makes sense that he was studying the matter, and part of studying the matter is to actually see it in action, not just in the abstract. If you can't, sometimes you can't. So you have no choice but to. But everyone will tell you that, no matter how you talk about, we discussed the Israeli Arab crisis, you know, the situation, the relationship, purely in the abstract, on the basis of reports, this and that. But if you go there yourself, and you You see, you go to the settlements, and you see the Jewish settlements, you see the Arabs, and you talk to the Arabs, and that, and you get a sense of both sides. I think it won't be identical, that's exactly, you'll see, your views will be modest. Not so far. Those who you thought were absolute tzaddikim are not the chapters. Those who you thought were absolute Rishonim, maybe aren't. And maybe there's grievances here. Maybe it's more complicated. Maybe it's more complicated than you think. So that's what the Pasuk teaches you. You're dealing with a human situation, and of course you have to resort to abstractions, but it's always better to go out there and see it in action for yourself. The result of Moshe's question is a good question. It's a good question. But it's true. It's a Musar Haskel. Of course, the Max makes the point that even that kind of baruchel, kviyachol, so to speak, is an avi era. Let me go down and see. I mean, that would refute your point. This God himself, and all this is kviyachol, so to speak, demonstrates that God doesn't come down, God doesn't go up, but God depicts himself in a certain way, as though he were coming down to see. It's a lesson for Dayanim. That's the point. For Dayanim, for judges should not make decisions until they've seen for themselves. Okay? Why not? That's the whole world doesn't operate with that system. The whole world operates, if he did this, he said this, so he's a culprit. The Jewish world, I'm saying, today. You read a report in the paper, he did this, he set up this institute, that's it, you're condemned. These people are going over here, they're condemned. Rather than getting into these particulars, maybe it's different. Usually it is different. But here are the stories. Maybe basically speaking, you'll still feel that it's wrong, but you'll have a different attitude towards the people, and you won't feel you have to condemn them so much. We all do this. We demonize all the people that we disagree with. But it's not so simple in reality. Max is correct. Part of it was not just to see how evil the Egyptians are, but why are the Jews? This is the question. What happened over here? Moshe knew that this is not the given order. He knew the history, that he'd gone to his people. He knew the story about how these Israelites come down and go. He knew all that. So this was something which did require serious study, because it was a major transformation. This was not the given order. Here are the people that had been invited in. They were in Goshen, they were upstanding citizens, and so on and so forth, and now they're slaves. What went wrong? And don't forget the Egyptians at their point of view. There was a story there, that these people are traitors, and so on and so forth. They were, maybe that's true. I mean, Moshe had to investigate and see for himself. So it's that, and he did discover certain things about the Egyptians, and he did discover certain things about the Jews. Interesting. We were talking about the Rashi that says that Moshe killed the Egyptians by using the name of God. It was some type of a metaphysical thing. There's a basis in the Pasuk of Al-Argeni Ata Omer. You say to kill me, so there's an implication. Of course, that's not the plain meaning of the Parsha. Halargeni Atom, are you saying that you're going to kill me? You can't only unlimate him. Shaharago b'shem amaforosh. And here we learn that Moshe killed the Egyptian who uttered God shem amaforosh, the ineffable man shame. Now it's very difficult to understand what Rashi is saying. The basic question is Rashi intended to be taken literally. But if that's the case, if that is the case, then it's virtually impossible to study the story. Because then you're introducing us into a world, and we have no way of figuring it out. If all of these Rashi, if that's the case, then nothing is going to fit anymore. We're assuming that the story makes sense to us on a plain level. And then it fits. So Moshe killed them, so they accused Moshe and said, "Are you going to kill us?" And then they told then Moshe ran away. It makes sense. But if we're now going to posit that Moshe had this power to kill people with the name Hashem HaMeforosh, then none of this is going to make sense anymore. That's a good question. That's a good question. Rashi's talking about some type of a subplot, that the incident between the Egyptian and the Jew that he was doing, you know, was based upon something else. It was based upon his desire to take over his wife, that whole story. He didn't ask another question. Because according to this Rashi, he was... what did Moshe see? Moshe saw, apparently, not just that he was hitting him. That's pretty commonplace. You could ask a question. I mean, you assume when there's... What did Moshe see from the fact that one Egyptian was hitting a Jew? Did he know that that was going on? I mean, you know that there's a situation of enslavement, so you know that there's, you know, this place, you know that these things are going on, that every so often it's going to be necessary to strike a worker. What's the big deal? You can ask a different question. And that is, we of course, as see the way the story is designed. The story is designed to get you. I mean, it makes perfect sense. As a Jew, as a little Jewish kid reading the story, so of course you identify with the Jew. So he's getting beat up, and Moshe is the hero. Moshe comes along, you know, it's almost like a Superman kind of thing. He beats up the Mitzri. Alright, then it gets botched up a little bit later by those two bad guys, Dathan and Aviram. But let's ask it differently. Why did Moshe go ahead and take such a risk to kill the Mitzri? Just because the Egyptian was hitting the Jew. I mean, of course, that's obviously not a good thing, but what did Moshe think was happening out there? He knew it was slavery by Yarvis of Goslam. He knew. Nelson ain't no believer, bro. He was involved. At this point in time, it became... See, it's interesting. Because people ask, well, why wasn't he concerned about it before? And it's just the way things are. I mean, the person goes through a development. You can't... By Yigdal. Yeah, but by Yigdal, it's true. It's true by Yigdal. But Rashi said, now he paid attention to this issue. No, but I'm saying that it presupposes that before a person gets involved in something, he has to be ready for it. A person always, is not always ready for it. It doesn't mean that this was the first thing, as soon as he got old, he had to do it. It means that there comes a time when this, you know, yeah, so all of a sudden a person is involved in certain issues. The Aguna problem, this thing, that. And so they say, well, this was going on for 20 years. How can suddenly? It's not necessarily a fair question. I know that. It was just mentioned. It's where you go. Right. Because that type of a question is not always fair, because each person goes through his own type of development. Intellectually and morally, you don't know what he's involved with. He could be involved in different issues, he could be involved in studying. It doesn't mean he doesn't care. It's very, people that ask that type of question are usually very self-centered. Since it's their issue, that's the only thing in the world. So finally, when a person comes around to it, instead of thanking him, they're like angry, like, well, why are you taking so long? I mean, of course, obviously there are certain issues. You're right. If there's a Holocaust, you can't say, well, okay, now I'm going to take a look at the Holocaust. That's something that demands immediate. But the other issues, and that's at the same time. So, at this point in time, Moshe was now prepared. I mean, mentally and emotionally and intellectually to deal with this issue. As I said, though, we can really ask a question on what seems so obvious. And we always took for granted that, of course, he killed the Egyptian. It doesn't seem to make sense. Because he knew that there was an enslavement. He knew that there was oppression. He had to know that these things were going on. Well, he said that everything was all nice and friendly. So then it's not slavery. The Jews were happily going about their work, and the Egyptians were just supervising and telling them what to do. And, why do it? What's the gain? How is this going to accomplish anything? Because the big picture is not this particular individual, the big picture is the situation. As a result of this, by the way, he had to leave. And he was out of the picture. Alright, so God sends him back into the picture. But, well, was this planned? So was this an accident? Yeah. He made a mistake, he was overcome by emotion. Doesn't seem to be the case. It seems to be part of his greatness, but he did this. And then I could ask, I'm turning it around now. And I'm saying, that you can raise an issue. It doesn't explain why he should have taken note. Seems to me, if he was going on a fact-finding mission, he should have taken note, see what's going on, and how am I going to deal with it? If he felt that perhaps the enslavement was such that it would just work, there was no physical abuse, but now that he finds out this physical abuse is different, this would normally happen. So he found out this physical abuse, correct? I mean, it isn't necessary, now it's not to me that compelling that he has to step in and put a stop to this, to this situation right now. That wasn't his purpose. His purpose wasn't to, so what are you going to do tomorrow? You can go out now and you're going to save every individual Jew. We're talking about hundreds of thousands of slaves. So what do? Every day you pick out a different guy and you're going to help him? At this point, I don't really have a solution to all these questions. I'm just going to sort of like, think out loud. Okay. So let's assume it says that, Moshe attained a certain level of maturity, he grew. There are two Vayigal. Correct? Okay. So what's the first Vayigal? Vayigal, it means that he attained a certain degree of maturity. The Bandas, the Bandas, the Bandas. Yeah. Let's say something that we can relate to. Okay. Interesting enough, then it says, Vayigal Mahain, it wasn't those days, Vayigal Moshe. And Moshe became big, grew up, Vayetei Alepha, and went out to his brothers. Vayigal Moshe, so Rosh is Balot Par Kosov, he tells you what he said, Vayigal Hayele. Okay, I'm going to be Yehuda Brevi Yilai, but he said, Harisha Mekama. The first is a reference to physical growth. Hashem Yedula. And the second means in terms of his position. Shem Yino Karo Al Beso. Karo appointed him over his household. So Rashi said. Right, so the first one simply means that he wasn't an infant anymore, he wasn't a baby, he was a child. So he was always, and then they brought him to the Bas Paro, and she was his mother, Vatila Avayil Olavain. It was an adopted child. Then he got older, means in terms of his maturity, and according to Rashi, Hazal, Paro appointed him over his household. So that means to say that he had attained a certain level of maturity in terms of his understanding, in terms of his ability, capacity, that type of thing. Now, you have to presuppose that at a certain point he was informed about the fact that he was Jewish. It's clear, otherwise there was nothing like that. And the Torah itself is saying that he went out to see about his brothers. So then he knew they were his brothers, that's for sure. Now, also, you'd have to assume that he had studied the matter. He was now in a position, clearly, he was drawn to the situation because he too was a Jew. Now, even though he was in a privileged position, so clearly, he was a different type of person, he could have separated himself from this. He didn't have to get involved in this issue because he was one of the chosen few. Nevertheless, he decided to get involved in it. Why did he decide to get involved in it? Well, you could say, first of all, there is a certain factor of identification. If you claim Me'echa, there's a certain factor of identification. But beyond identification, he had to be someone who was concerned with justice as well. So that combination, until a person reaches the ultimate, the level of perfection, then identification is a concern. Basically, the world as it goes, people that are involved in causes, usually it's their cause, it's their people. He's fighting for the for Jews, or the Jewish cause. It's Jews, basically. Who's fighting for the blacks? It's going to be a black. That's the way it's going to be. You'll get a few people from other groups that'll cross the line, but essentially, they're all fighting for justice. Everybody's fighting for justice. So why is it that it's only black justice that he's fighting for? Why is it only Jewish justice that he's fighting for? And why is it only Arab justice that he's fighting for? So, obviously, it's not just justice. One can speculate, yes, let's say Moshe had not been Jewish. Let's say he didn't have the echo factor. Would the story be the same? Now, by implication, since the Torah does emphasize Echad, it would seem to be that at this point in time it's Echad. That it's not, that's just the way the world is. That it's very rare that a person becomes a citizen of mankind. My Echad is complementary, it's positive, in the sense that, again, even when a person is fighting for the cause of his own people, it's because he personally is caught up in that cause. And his family, so he's fighting. He's a union leader because he's a worker, so he's fighting. That's his cause. That affects him as well. But he doesn't just take care of himself; he takes care of the whole group. The same is true with every other situation. But Moshe Rabbeinu had no need in terms of the personal. Yeah, he wasn't. No, he wasn't. I don't think he was, similarly, he was freed. He was rescued from the, you know, burden of the Jewish people. He really didn't have to be part of the Jewish people. He had a choice. He did not have to be part of the Jewish people. The Jewish people meant the enslaved people. That's all it meant at that time. He chose to be Jewish. Let's assume that he studied the issue, okay? Before that fateful day when he went out to sea. Now, when he studied the issue, did he have discussion? Or did he just read the books? No. Did he go to the Cairo Institute of political, enslavement 101? Did he take that course? Bondage? Was there an Egyptian point of view? Did he study both sides of the issue? As we are taught to do? Was he like those Israelis today who try to understand both sides of the issue? Yeah, this is a two people. People both have rights, you know, fighting over the same. As most many liberal Jews understand it to be. So clearly, perhaps he was struggling to try and understand what was going on here. You do see, even Rashi says, "Achein no da hadavar." It's more than just referring to the fact that, you know, his act of murder has been discovered. He understands. He's wondering what's going on over here. Why were the Jews there? Rashi specifically, what did the Jews do to deserve this? But I would say that if Moshe had to go out and see, then maybe it was not that clear to him what the nature of this enslavement was all about. Because you could ask that question. Why do you have to go? We discussed that yesterday. I know I took the other side. But you can ask, why do you have to go? What's so important about seeing? All right. I said the person should look into the situation. That's true, but the Torah makes a point of it. Basically, if you have the information that a group of people is being decimated, so what do you have to go and see for yourself for? Unless you don't trust the information. You heard about the Holocaust. You know what's going on. Unless you're not sure that it's happening. But if you are sure that it's happening, so you have to go actually see the gassing. Is that going to make a difference? That the Egyptians also had a point of view. Not a true one, but you see that part by Yomer Alamo. Power had to use justification for what he was doing. Right? He justified his position. He had a whole explanation of what was going on, that the Jewish people are such and such, and that they're disloyal to us, and we have to do this, and so on and so forth. I mean, clearly, if somebody had come to the country and asked what's going on over here, there was a need to justify what he was doing. Even back in those days, when there was dictatorship and oppression and tyranny, he had to justify what he was doing. He couldn't just present the Egyptian nation as an evil nation. I mean, every society, even Nazi Germany and Oxfam, did not present themselves as evil. They, quite the contrary. They thought they were doing what was right, idealist. And no matter how brutal a regime is, it'll always claim that it's the right, it's what it's doing is because it has to do it, and there's the evil enemy. So it always has an enemy. And it'll always justify the evil. No one's ever going to come out and say, yeah, I'm just evil, I believe in evil. And that's why I'm just using all these people to serve my needs. You know, everybody will justify it. Any persecution, whatever the case may be, it's always they'll always show it's the nature of these people. These people are not capable of living side by side. Segregationists will defend segregation. They're not going to say it's evil. Okay? Now, if that is the case, so then it would seem if Moshe went out to look for himself, he probably heard both sides. He probably heard the Egyptian side as well. Whatever, I don't know exactly what the nature of the Egyptian side was, but whatever it was, it must have meant that there is, that this is there's a system over here. This is the way it has to be. It's a system. The Egyptians themselves, the people and their children, when they would observe this phenomenon, they'd have to have a certain way of understanding it. Just like in America, when they had slavery, it made sense to everybody, to white people and white children. It made sense that there were two classes in society, and for whatever reason were used to justify it, it made sense. Because also, not only did it have to make sense, but it had to, in order for slavery to exist, and even in America, eventually, fell apart, but it could not be too brutal either. You see? In many cases, it wasn't. I mean, in many, I don't know all the details about slavery in America, but there were southern plantations where they treated the slaves in a decent fashion. They were still slaves, but they treated them decently. Not in an inhumane fashion, other than the fact of slavery itself, obviously. And because, you see, what happens is that it becomes pure brutality, so then you can't defend it anymore. Then, of course, then the group itself is going to rebel, but that's one thing. But even the world is going to say, this is pure brutality, there's no justification for this. So the question is, was there really justification? And was it a system? And this made the most sense, given the nature of this people, the Jewish people now, going back to Egypt, given the nature of this people, so the systems that we had enacted were necessary and correct, or no? Was that just a guide? And underneath it all, it was just a system. If that's the case, then this particular incident is extremely important. Because this particular incident was one which enabled Moshe to understand the true nature of what was going on here. And then the second incident, the incident between the two Jews, was also extremely significant. It's not just two separate, incidents. One day he encountered the Egyptian, one day he encountered the Jews. Both sides. But what you saw over here, the fact that an Egyptian would be hitting a Jew, why would that bother Moshe so much? Why would that, make note of it, but why would that tip the scales? What's so significant about that? You have to assume that in an army, you have an army, you have the, basically the training going on, there's going to be cases where the commanders are going to have to use, a certain amount of force to over the soldiers, and that's the way it is. Right? You see, if it's being done out of necessity, so then it's one thing. That's where Rashi comes in. And what Moshe saw was something unusual. It didn't fit the picture. He saw that this individual was being subjected to a different type of treatment. Okay? Now, I'm not going to... Rashi gives you the background. And how Moshe knew, whether he knew with Ruach HaKodesh or whatever the case may be, is not really that important anymore. See? But it meant to say, from this incident, you could see the real character of what was going on. And that is that essentially it was rooted in base emotions, just to exploit and destroy the Jewish people. That's what he saw. Because he saw what he did in the field, and he saw what he did in the house. You need to say that this is not, that what you had over here was a situation where one people had an opportunity to gratify all of their base emotions, their aggressive emotions, and if that's the case, then why are you going into his house and taking his wife and getting him out there? And are you using this whole mechanism to basically gratify your base emotions? That's what it's all about. The same is with the Nazis. The Nazis claimed that what they were doing was idealistic because of the Jewish the contamination of the Jewish race, etc. So, yeah, but the truth of the matter is that they were just exploiting their own money. They were stealing the money from the Jews and raping the women. It was purely an instinctual thing. That's what Moshe saw. Moshe saw that this was not what they would, what they claimed that it was, that it was a system with some type of a legitimacy behind it. He saw that it was nothing except what you had over here was a strong people, you know, with a weaker people, and of course there were reasons why they hated the Jews and all that, but he saw it was basically an expression of baseness and hatred and exploitation and just an unmitigated evil. And the reason why he slew him was because, you see, I'll ask you another question. Why did the Egyptian have to do? Why didn't he just kill the Jew? He was Nargish. Once the Egyptian realized that the Jew, the husband, knew about it, why didn't he just kill him? Instead, he didn't just kill him. He increased the labor and he didn't kill him. What do you see from that? They couldn't do that. This would break the system. In other words, they had it worked out that he couldn't really do that. They wouldn't allow him to do that, just like the Nazis themselves had rules. And you couldn't just go in. You couldn't just go into a Jew. Any German couldn't just walk into a Jewish home and kill the guy and take his money. And he would have been persecuted by them. I mean, the Nazis did it in their own systematic way. It had to be in accordance with the system. So why didn't the Egyptian just kill the guy? He couldn't do that. Because that would have been obvious then that he had it was a personal thing. So what he tried to do was to cover it up by making him work harder and all these different things. But Moshe saw through that. See, when Moshe saw what he was really up to, that this was simply, an attempt to kill him through the work and then take his wife, then he realized the whole nature of the situation. And then he killed him. He killed him to save his life, basically. That's what he realized, that his life was in danger. He didn't kill him to leave the Jew. Yeah, because then, you see, then he realized that he had an obligation to save this person's life. Because other than that, if it was simply a case where a Jew, for whatever reason, hadn't done his work and the Egyptian hit him, I mean, that happened later on too. It happened later on when Moshe came back to Paro. And they would hit him, and then Paro increased the labor, and then they hit the Jews because they weren't putting in, and they cried, and then Moshe didn't go out and kill all these guys. Right? So this, that's part of the situation. It's unfortunate. So if Moshe simply would have encountered a Jew being hit, that's not gonna, that doesn't mean he's necessarily going to kill the Egyptian. Because maybe that comes with the nature of the situation. Moshe was studying the nature of the situation. But that's why Rashi is telling you that this thing was unique. Rashi is very, very important. Because this was decisive for Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu then saw what the nature of the situation was all about. And he also saw that in spite of the way this person was operating, that he was really going to kill this Jew. So then he realized that he had a chiyuv to save this person's life, if he could. So that's Vayarchi Einish. Because if there was anybody there, he wouldn't have done it, because it wouldn't be worth it. It wouldn't make sense. It wouldn't make sense to risk his own life or, you know, the whole situation then. He wouldn't have acted. But once he saw that there was nobody there, he had a chiyuv to say, oh, that's all for Pasha. Of course, on the next day, he saw a different side of the picture. Then he saw he was studying the whole situation, and the whole situation consisted of what happened over here. He knew, if you went back far enough, there was a period of time when there was a certain harmony between the Jews and the Egyptians, and this whole situation had changed. And he had to find out what was going on. What was going on from the Egyptian side, and what was going on from the Jewish side. And this day, he discovered what was going on from the Egyptian side. How did you, and why did you, that why did Moshe have to look into it? How can anybody make any justification? The assumption being that it's wrong. So this is what Marty's asking. I'm saying, first of all, that usually, clever people are able to mask, you know, to try and put a spin on what they're doing. Take a look at some of our side of things. Okay? In the crimes, overt crimes, and so on and so forth, you go into all kinds of spins and distortions and so on. But alright, even aside from that,
even if you say that the person like Moshe would deal with this one under any and all circumstances, the law. Yeah, but he had to look for himself because he had to understand the nature of the evil. He might have acted differently. See, we can't predict. It's very difficult to predict what would have happened had this not occurred. Because then we wouldn't have the facts. But I am obligated to explain why he went out and what was he looking for and what did he find. That's provided by the Rashis. That's why the Rashis are very important. Now, if that bothers you, you will definitely agree with me that before Moshe would act, he would have to really see the character and how it's manifesting itself in order to create the best possible strategy. So therefore, even if I accept what you're saying, that Moshe did not have to go out and see for himself. He was convinced that it was unmitigated evil. Which I question, I mean, because, you know, maybe the Egyptians are right. Maybe the Jews did certain things and they really deserved to be in this situation. The next day, he realized that the Jews, there was a reason why the Jews were in this situation. There were some defects over there. But whatever you want to say, it's still necessary for Moshe to go out and see the character of the phenomenon. What's going on over there? Because otherwise you can't deal with them. You won't be able to formulate the strategy. What's important about the Rashi is not specifically the exact... Rashi gives names, you know, who it happened, so I don't see why I shouldn't take it as factual. But what's really important over here is to explain the necessity. And so why is Rashi... the story makes sense. I started off with that question. But the story makes sense at face value. Why is there a need? Now I show you why there's a need. But there's something much, much deeper, and Chazal understood that. And then this was the information that they utilized or had. I can't explain how they came to this point.